Chapter 5. Judge not. Judge not, that you be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And the measure you give will be the measure you receive. Why do you see the splinter in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, "Let me take the splinter out of your eye," when there is a log in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the splinter out of your brother's eye. Matthew 7:1-5.
Once again, we place you before the certainty that the Sermon on the Mount is given for pupils of a Christian spiritual school, for the circle of candidates in the Christian mysteries. These pupils are deprived of the right of judgment and criticism. They are unqualified for this and are warned to refrain from it in order to avoid bad consequences. This warning we convey to you insofar as you want to call yourself a pupil of the spiritual school of the Rosicross, which means being in a Christian school of sanctification. From experience, we know that to refrain from judgment and criticism is one of the hardest lessons of the universal philosophy. Nothing is more difficult for the Westerner than a life free of criticism. We readily grouse and rattle at tea time. We are instantly ready to judge in intellectual and spiritual matters. We are even brought up on criticism. It is one of the pillars of life. What would become of democracy without criticism? If it were to be taken from us, we would be without rights. Aren't we allowed to judge a teaching given to us? Then how are we to react to the ideas and slogans that are poured out over the people? May we not criticize things and people that are evil? Do we have to bow to the authorities in negative resignation? Do we just ignore the issues that present themselves and that cause an effect of attraction or repulsion in us? Do I have to lie that something is beautiful when it strikes me as ugly? May I not withdraw from an atmosphere I find revolting? Do I have to become totally unnatural and insane? Many thought, and sharply expressed it, that we wanted to prevent criticism of the work of the Rosicross when we put forward the concept of non-criticism combined with obedience to the work. They thought, "We pupils have to keep our mouths shut. We realize that we place you before great difficulties and that it will not be easy to understand each other rightly. Just like you, we think that in this broken nature order, we cannot do without criticism and judgment. They are our weapons of self-defense, but they are weapons that always wound severely. For the time being, bumbling democracy is the only type of government we deserve. Occasionally, after a fierce debate lasting many weeks, a small particle of human rights scrapes through by the skin of its teeth by means of the decision of a majority of one. The most disastrous ideas envelop us with false splendor, and sometimes one needs all one's power of judgment to tear away the veils. In dialectics, one needs to be armed with judgment and criticism. However, did you feel the distress, the tearing soul anguish, when you were forced to apply this method, or became a victim of it yourself, even though it was justifiable? In our opinion, there is no such thing as justifiable criticism. Did you ever experience that expressing a destructive judgment attacked your physical body and polluted your blood? When one belongs to this world, the weapons of judgment and criticism are to be used. We know of no other method for the man of this nature. Yet its application is a ghastly misery. It causes conflicts and illness. The right to judge and criticize is like the curse of paradise. Its consequences are sometimes taken even into the temples, for your thoughts rush down to the speaker, and very often they are not quite kind. Thus, the curse pursues us into the Rosicross. To some people, this dialectical method has become second nature to such an extent that they cannot do without it. The consequences are blood pollution, heart conditions, and nervous disorders. No one can live above his state of being. Therefore, if this second nature is your nature, we have nothing to say to you. We only address those who want to go the path of sanctification in the Christian mystery school, and it is to them, to these mountain climbers, that Christ addresses his warning. These people wish to rise above dialectical methods, to be in this world, yet not of this world. It is from these people that the right of judgment must be taken away if they are to achieve their aims. They must consciously and from below upwards free themselves from a part of the paradise curse. This requirement can be justified without any weighty reasoning. Why do you see the splinter in your brother's eye but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? It is a well-known fact in Gnostic science, and you will be able to check this easily after some investigation, that the physical body is surrounded by an aural sphere known as the respiration field or desire body. This aural sphere is not some sort of radiation field in which forces are present that must either be absorbed or rejected by the rest of the organism. It has a clear tissue structure and forms part of the body. Obviously, the nature and vibration of this aural sphere are very individual. They differ in each one of us. Through your aural sphere, you observe and perceive sensorily what surrounds you and is connected with you. We belong to a fallen nature order. We are extremely badly damaged and have degenerated into such caricatures of the original human being that none of us can perceive objectively by means of the dialectical body. Our aural sphere is a fogged-up reason, a badly damaged mirror, unsuitable for judicious use. Therefore, you live in a great delusion. In reality, nothing is as you perceive it, sensorily. Philosophers, as well as the Gnostic scientists of all times, have drawn attention to this, but without indicating its sober, structural cause, namely, that our body is imperfect and we live in a world of delusion. As a pupil of the Rosicross, you will know yourself to be incompetent to judge with this defective organism. At best, you can guess what the consequences of your judgments and deeds will be. You will surely understand that the splinter you may see in someone else's eye is probably the consequence of the pile which is in your own eye, for everything we see is coloured by the aura. Whatever is wrong in our own sphere, we see in the other person. Whatever you accuse another person of can often be found in yourself. This seems to be so logical and simple that in fact we should not have to talk about it. In popular belief, this truth has been preserved by the wise proverbs, "Three demons are ill-doers," and "The pot is calling the kettle black." If you wish to serve the spiritual school, you cannot approach people and the world with your critical faculty. In the downward course from the divine order, you lost not only the higher faculties of spirit and soul, but also the characteristics of the original bodily figure down to the most elementary ones. Your highly esteemed sense organs are at most grope organs. You do not perceive, but presume and grope. In accordance with your state of being, you suppose the situation to be this or that, and then you act speculatively. This is your exalted right to judge and criticize. The spiritual school states that with this faculty you cannot advance in the higher life, that you must rid yourself of this form of sensory perception and sensory reaction to false and distorted images. Every person lives in his own imaginary world and judges his surroundings through it. Consequently, we have reached a state of complete separateness. We live in an I situation, in an I world. We are highly abnormal, hence the flood of ideas and the fact that we never agree about anything. Hence the boundless egotism, the self-maintenance and all its innumerable bitter consequences. Do you see that what is concerned here is the essence of our wretched existence? A judgment is a decision, a concrete thought image, and it always provokes a reaction in the world around us and within us. We are always measured with the measure we use. That is why it is such a mess here. What is built up by the one is broken down by the other. What is intended to be good by the one is spoilt by the other. When the spiritual school advises you to give up the dialectical right to judge and criticize, this is not done to give the workers an easier life, but to cure you of a serious illness. The point is to try to save you from a more serious case of mental illness than you would ever have thought possible. Assuming that this problem has become clear to you, we would now like to explain what the spiritual school requires of you. You hypocrite, that is, you imperfect, caricatural, and so untrue person. The meaning here is not you deceiver or primitive wretch. First, take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the splinter out of your brother's eye. If you want to understand these words, take care that you do not immediately fall victim to a new kind of mystification. Many of you will assert that you are engaged in removing the log from your own eye, or have already succeeded in doing so. However, what is meant here is the purification of the aural field, the reconstruction of the original bodily figure, and the breaking down of the earthly dialectical tabernacle, as Paul says. In short, here too the pupil is placed before the mystery of sanctification of the Christian spiritual school. Judge. The question now is how the pupil should behave in the period between the farewell to the dialectical faculty of criticism and the new maturity resulting from the interchange of personality. In this time of transition, shouldn't one decide and act for or against things? We need to recognize friend or enemy, don't we? In this period, you must live by the standards most holy to you, which have their basis in your heart and sparkle in your consciousness. Everything that lies outside this is speculation. Starting from these standards of life, you carry out your work as you know best, while day by day you try to improve and ennoble their quality. Judgment and criticism will assail you. It is the normal reaction of this world, but you do not judge. You just do your work according to your conviction, and you keep trying to observe what motivates the other person, what he aims at, what he wants. When your opinion, your striving, your desire clashes with that of one of your friends, colleagues, or family, you will immediately call to mind your organic defect, your structural shortcomings. Examining yourself, you will then reflect on the situation. It is certain that you will see the light without having to violate your standards of life. Then you will experience a strange sensation. It is all so simple, so obvious. At the next meeting, the difficulty will have vanished, for your friend or relative will also have examined himself and reflected according to the spiritual method, with the result that the former adversaries finally come to the same conclusion. The status of the I and its world is broken through, and all who are struggling along this road will experience the wonderful sensation that a communion of feeling, judging, and acting is born. All this, independently and without imposed discipline, as a sancta democratio. The wonders. If you have climbed the Temple Mount and regard yourself as a pupil, we advise you to approach your fellow man and the world around you without criticism. Meet them with all the positivity of your deepest conviction, which has its basis in your heart. Do not force your will on people, but show your aim by your action and observe impersonally. Then you will experience a wonder. You will recognize the brothers of the new covenant, and they will recognize you. Difference of opinion will not exist any longer. From that moment on, you will live in a world of true spiritual community. Only then will you have the right to assist each other on the path and to help the other when he asks for it with love. Every pupil on the path should realize that he can never force another person into a spiritual status or act that is not in accordance with his state of being. Every pupil on the path should realize that he will clash time and time again with people of different states of being. For this reason, a lack of understanding exists on both sides. Consequently, among pupils who do not yet understand the requirements of the Sermon on the Mount, the fire of criticism burns often, inflicting deep wounds. Let us choose to be taught by Jesus Christ that another, a shorter way exists. Let us also, with respect to these things, be in this world but not of this world.